Hello, everyone in Construction Land. Welcome to our podcast, Constructive Conversations, your source for anything and everything construction related and a little bit more. This podcast is brought to you by the fine folks of and my employer, Brown Edwards & Company CPAs. Our guest today is a partner in our firm out of the Lynchburg office who also oversees the artist formerly known as Alliance Wealth Strategies, now known as Brown Edwards Wealth Strategies, Ryan McIntyre. Ryan is here today to talk about investment and retirement planning. Welcome to the show, Ryan.
Thank you, Eddie. Glad to be here.
So, Ryan, tell us a little bit about yourself and about your background in public accounting and also in wealth services.
Sure. So, as you mentioned, I'm a partner with Brown Edwards. I've been a tax partner there for 14 years. I've been with the firm 21 years. And we've been working in the wealth management space for just over 8 now. I started my career at a large firm called Crow out of the Midwest and moved to Brown Edwards in 2003 when I relocated down to Lynchburg. And I've just been so appreciative to be a part of the Brown Edwards team and have the opportunity to bring the wealth services to the firm and grow that as part of our service offering.
So you had mentioned to me in your bio that you're a Cali boy, California,
right.
Moved to Columbus, then to Lynchburg, played some college football.
I did.
Big football fan.
Yeah. Yeah. I grew up in Los Angeles, so it was, football was a big deal out there, especially even in the high school and prep leagues, and got to play in the 605 All-Star game, which divided Los Angeles. So got to play with some pretty incredible talent and pretty incredible players then. Went on to play college ball. Had a funny incident where I, at that 605 game, I got recruited by Washington State, and I was super excited. I mean, if you live on the West Coast and you're getting recruited by a Pac-10 team, it's a big deal. Unfortunately, when they came up and met me, the comment that came from the coach was, "There must have been a funny angle, or everybody else had to be short too." And because I was a 5'11" offensive lineman, and in those days they weren't looking for anybody under 6'3". So my Big Ten, my big football dreams, Pac-10 dreams were dashed quickly. But I did find a home in D3 and played 4 years for D3 and ended my career as an academic All-American.
That's
awesome. For the University of Redlands.
You look like you could play now still. Do you have any eligibility left?
Actually, I think I have 1 year on an injury red shirt, but I think we all got a free COVID year, didn't we? I think all athletes got a free COVID year. Unfortunately, I think I do have that 50-year-old aches and pains that would probably not feel good. They'd probably feel good the one day I played, and then the next week I'd be a wreck.
I understand that. Well, don't take offense to this, but if I ever start a Brown Edwards fight club, you're not getting invited because I want it to be fair for everybody. If anybody's listening to the podcast and not watching, Ryan's jacked. He's still into weightlifting, and he definitely looks like he could still go out and knock some people around on the football field.
Yeah, like I said, I'd probably just pay for it the next day.
Yeah, I understand that. So you also said that you're into your musical preferences are some rap and some alternatives, 90s.
Yeah, I'm a child of the 90s, so I run the gambit from, from Tupac to White Zombie. That's what the playlist is made up of.
80s and 90s were the best decades to grow up in, I believe.
They were. And in Los Angeles as well. I mean, I had the opportunity to see, Guns N' Roses play at the Roxy my senior year of high school. And,
that's great.
Do you get to, get to do stuff like that?
Mm-hmm. Well, in the eternal words of Tone Loc, let's do it. So let's get started with this podcast.
All right.
Can you tell us about Brown Edwards and Brown Edwards Wealth Strategies services?
Yeah, so Brown Edwards Wealth Strategies is a wholly owned subsidiary of Brown Edwards. And we set it up that way because we wanted it to be client focused. We didn't want it to provide value to anybody other than the firm. And we were hoping that that would help kind of inspire the client referrals. The other nice thing about that is that, you know, the only business we do are for folks that are already clients. So our focus in that space is just making the client relationship better. You know, we are a fiduciary level advisor, which was important to the firm and to me when we started. So we cannot accept any other fees other than what the advisory fee is paid by the client. So there's nothing hidden and there's no incentives. And as a fiduciary, we have a higher level of responsibility, which means that we have to do what's in the client's best interest, which is great because that's kind of how we're wired on our CPA side and as CPAs. And since all of our advisors are CPAs and now added wealth management services, it's a perfect tangential relationship to allow us to serve our clients and bring that investment expertise, but with the style of a CPA, that trusted advisor style. And so we can provide services that are well beyond just the investment aspect because all of our advisors are, you know, tax professionals, and tax and wealth are just, they're just so integrated together, you know, and it's, in its simplest form, you take your investment return and you take out of it the fees you pay and the taxes you pay, and the rest you get to keep. And so, as a Brown Edwards Wealth Strategies advisor, we can focus on all three of those lines. We can focus on helping with the investment return. As a fiduciary, we're trying to get the lowest possible fee structure for them. And then we can focus on the tax planning. And so hopefully what we're doing is returning an overall better net result than our competitors would.
It truly is like a one-stop shop, like going to Walmart and getting your taxes and bookkeeping and investment services all done at one place by the same person.
That's right. And the sharing of resources, you know, and the nice thing is that, you know, in a normal advisor relationship, if your advisor's not doing a good job, there's not as much oversight that there's there. In our case, you know, our clients, you know, have another touch point. They usually have, you know, a tax partner, an audit partner that is also looking over, you know, their returns, what we're doing, how we're treating them. And so that I love that extra layer of accountability that we have. And I think our clients appreciate it too.
Yeah, I believe so also. So, can you give us an investment outlook, especially in an election year, how the near term looks?
Yeah, election years are always tough because if you think about it, no matter what party's in power, and we're not doing this as a political conversation, but just more as a general observation, you know, whatever party is not in power is typically criticizing the economy. You know, there's always the famous saying in politics that it's the economy, stupid. And that seems to be true in this election too. So, I mean, with the high levels of inflation, the high cost of energy, those things, you know, are making voters very aware of the economy. So a lot of the political ads we're seeing focus on the economy, which can, you know, suppress or even depress things like consumer optimism and their people's willingness to buy things because they start hearing more and more information about the economy, you know, about how negative the economy is from the party out of power. We are certainly living in volatile times. We saw that over the last couple of weeks. We saw, you know, after the last Federal Reserve meeting, you know, Jerome Powell did not do a rate cut. The market had kind of priced in a quarter basis point cut. When that didn't happen, the market kind of felt like that the Federal Reserve was getting behind the curve, and therefore there was a lot of volatility. We had a, you know, some 5%, you know, 5% drop day, moved into correction territory, and then we kind of quickly rebounded because there's other fundamentals that are strong. The things that we're watching right now is obviously unemployment rate is starting to climb, and that's a real concern. I do believe that unemployment was probably artificially low because of the high prices. Many people are working more than one job these days. And if we start to see job losses and an increase in the unemployment rate, I think it could turn catastrophic pretty quickly because, you know, you could, if even you lost the second job, that's going to put a lot of households, you know, behind in their budget. That's a real concern. Consumer debt is at an all-time high. It's higher than it was in 2008. And consumer debt, you know, was what kind of led to the 2008 crash. We're seeing that at all-time high, and the kind of one of the biggest flashing red lights out there right now has been the default rate on that consumer debt. Banks are starting to report higher and higher default rates, and that's usually kind of the sign that we're hitting that crossing point, because when people start to default on their debt, you know, that's when the economy kind of starts to come to a halt. You know, we've been on a sugar high from COVID. You think about when we coming, you know, going back to COVID, most of the population went home and worked and still received a paycheck, received stimulus funds, you know, businesses received stimulus funds. And so there was a lot of cash available in the work, you know, in the market, you know. And then so that's why we saw things like car price, and we had some shortages too, but we saw things where prices started to go up because there was so much money, so much consumption happening. The consumer got used to that, and that continued, you know, beyond when that money ran out, because lifestyle is a hard thing to change. And then they started to use it on debt. And then we went from debt, you know, we'll spend into debt until we can't spend into debt anymore. And that's usually when we start to see that tipping point. And, you know, it looks like we could be getting to that point. The counterbalance to that is that, you know, some the consumer demand is still fairly strong. There still seems to be pent-up demand. The housing market has cooled a little bit, but which is just but it's spurring a new kind of a new round of buying because of this pent-up demand. It's just when do those things kind of run out? And unfortunately, in an election year with all these things happening, it sure is looking like, you know, the we're going to be in for some tough days ahead in the market.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but even after we get through the election, it'll still take some time for proposals to be put in place in Congress to pass them. So it won't be like an immediate fix after the election.
For most things, you're right, because, you know, I mean, for tax policies and spending bills, they're going to have to work their way through. And again, unless you've got a majority in the House and a significant majority in the Senate, a lot of those bills can still be slowed down or even blocked, especially on the Senate side. So yeah, those things are different. Now, there are some areas where you can see immediate improvement. One example is energy. Energy is so forward-looking. You know, it's looking 9, 12 months out. So if a party wins that has a very pro-energy strategy, you could see prices at energy start to come down right away because it's such a forward-looking indicator.
Yeah, it's definitely something to watch and see how everything unfolds. So, Ron, what advice do you have for employers that are either already in a plan or wanting to start a plan?
That's a great question, Eddie. So let's start with for people that are already in a plan. I think the one important thing when you have a plan is that, you know, you are the plan sponsor. And so when we're talking to people who are already in a plan, it's making sure they're doing the things that protects them as a plan sponsor. And there's two big areas that I think that they should be concerned with. One is that you're providing, you know, advice and education to your employees. And the second is that you have a mechanism for a step, you know, for evaluating and selecting the investments that you have. And what you're allowed to do is you're allowed to offload those to professionals. And that's a huge recommendation, because when you offload those, that shields you to a great extent from the risk of providing those things. So you avoid the risk of having a claim that an employee was never educated, or they were provided the wrong investment options, those kind of things. And so by having, you know, either what we call a 321 advisor, a financial advisor, or a 338 fund manager, or really we want both. One handles the advising and education, and one handles the plan selection, the selection of the investment options. And that can be the same person or it can be different parties. Those should be in place. But more importantly, they should be showing up. You know, you should be having at least annual education on the plan and the market and how the investments work for your employees. And the, you know, from the advisor side, the plan, the asset side, if you have that outsourced, then they're doing an evaluation every year, making sure that the investments that should be there. Those things kind of help create a more successful plan because the employees are becoming more engaged and they're understanding what they're doing. And when they understand what they're doing, they're more likely to participate. On new plans, I think there's probably, I will talk about two topics there. The first is there are credit incentives to set up a new plan. And so those can really help offset the costs of establishing a plan, which for the first year, which is significant. The other thing is that the second piece is really you could have a plan that is designed especially for you if you have the right, what we call third-party administrator, TPA. We are fortunate at Brown Edwards. We have Dan Bowman. Dan is a partner of mine, friend of mine, and I have not seen anybody better at designing plans than he is. And because there's things that you can do with, you know, how you do profit sharing allocations and how you do your testing so that you're kind of maximizing the benefit of your plan, you know, to your key employees or the people that you really want to have take advantage of it. And when you have a great TPA that could help craft a plan at its, you know, at its start like that, it can make a big difference to the organization, its retention, its employee satisfaction over the long haul.
Yeah. Dan's a great guy. He's helped me a few times, got really creative on some plans for a few of my clients.
And he can really help. And for those that have existing plans, you know, plans are easy to modify and are frankly required to be modified, especially from the Secure Act of Secure Act 2.0. And if you haven't had your plan modified, you know, having someone like Dan Bowman take a look at it is critical.
And we've gotten into it from the employer standpoint. Those that do not have plans already, some of them have been looking to put a plan in as a recruiting and retention tool. You know, labor is hard to keep. It's hard to recruit. And when you put a plan in place, it keeps current employees from jumping ship to go to work for someone else that has those benefits.
That's right. And we've actually seen, you know, and we deal with a lot with construction companies as well. And what we've seen too on that space is we can go in and work with a plan and get it in place. And oftentimes when we're talking to the sponsor, the company, they're like, we're not sure employees are going to take advantage of this. And then they're surprised that you get out there and you have, you know, a conversation about the plan. And we, you know, depending on who, what platform we're using, we can bring even Spanish speaking resources to the table that really helps with that demographic and being able to understand and trust the plan and participate in it. And, you know, and adding things like an app and helping them get apps set up on their phone so that they can see it really helps build that trust factor that's key in setting up a plan in those kind of industries.
So for those employees that are looking to start participating in a plan, you know, we have, you and I are both in one demographic, and I'll just say over 40, but we won't say how far over 40 either one of us are. And then there's under 40. So what advice would you give for those under 40 when it comes to investing in retirement planning?
Yeah. So the best advice that's possible under 40 is, you know, use the Roths. And Roths, for those that are listening that aren't familiar, there's two type of deferral options, and most plans offer both. There's a pre-tax option, which is just like it sounds. You put in $100 into the plan because you're saving the taxes. It's coming out before taxes. It's probably costing you $75 out of your paycheck. The Roth comes after tax. So if you put $100 in the Roth, it's 100. It's reducing your paycheck by $100. However, when you fast forward to the future, and you've worked 30, 35, 40 years, all of the growth in that Roth from your contribution is tax-free. Now, the employer match is still taxable when it comes out, but all the money you've deferred and all the growth associated with the money that you've deferred is tax-free. And when you compound that out 30 or 40 years, and you've developed an account that's $400,000 or $500,000, and it's tax-free in the future, it makes a meaningful impact on what you could spend in retirement. I think the other thing, if you're an under 40 investor, and you have dreams of, being a millionaire, which I will tell you is very possible, and it is very possible at many different income levels if you start saving early and investing early. But in order to be a millionaire, I think a lot of times you have to kind of act like a millionaire. And I don't mean like acting like we see people on, on Instagram influencers and out shopping. I mean, when the most of the millionaires that I know and that I work with are the ones that, when they need a new car, they buy a used car. They are shopping with coupons. They're looking for things on sale. They're buying houses that are at or below their means. So doing those early those decisions early, and they're not always fun. It's not all, you can't have a keep up with the Joneses mentality. But if you're willing to set your standards based on where you want to go and kind of, have that, have the end in mind, then you can achieve those things. It's, and you just, you defer as much as you can. You start where you're comfortable. Each time at raise time, add a percentage point or two. Just small increments at every chance you get. You pay off a car, instead of letting that money reabsorb into your budget, take a little bit of it and add to your investment account. Those kind of things are impactful over the long haul. So it's the vehicles, but it's also having that attitude that I'm going to maximize investments. I'm going to pay my investment account just like I'm paying my taxes or paying my mortgage or those things. And you just put it on that list of, mandatory expenses and do it, kind of early and often, and then just increase it every opportunity you get. And it is a powerful, powerful tool.
Well, that certainly inspired me to save more money. But you're right, making smart choices. And also, you said with the Roths, the tax-free component. And I think anytime you say tax-free, that's like angel singing. Anytime you hear that word, those words tax-free.
That's right.
So,
It is for us, for a tax person, that's for sure.
yeah. And for anybody that's, tax adverse,
That's
simply
right.
paying, which is 90, 99 point 99.99999% of the people I know. So for those of us that are just a little bit past that 40-year-old mark, maybe just, a little bit, that much, what advice would you give them?
So it's never too late, right? Because when, even if we're, past that 40 mark by a little bit, like we say, you enter that phase, it's called your accumulation years. When we get to that age, hopefully in those things we're kind of settled into our home, we're settled into a lot of things, we're at a higher point in our earnings. And it's, again, it's a little bit about that same discipline. We can start to let our standard of living, increase, and kind of have that creep, lifestyle creep, as we call it. Or you can kind of stay disciplined. And look, I want people to enjoy the fruits of their labor. And we talk about this with our wealth clients. We have to have a balance, because if you save everything, you know, then it's not worth all the hard work you're putting in into your job. So you have to have a balance. But when you're in your you know, past 40 years, that's the time where it starts to focus on your investing. And, you know, you want to make sure that, you know, I kind of look at it in levels. I think the first level is we get a safety net built. You know, if you have it already, great. If not, you should have, you know, 3, 4, 5 months of living expenses. Then your next goal, you know, is to take your 401k and try to get that, you know, certainly to the max match, if not maxing what you can do to it. If you fill up that bucket, then, you know, if you can do a backdoor Roth IRA or even a non-deductible IRA, and then if you've got that bucket filled, move to your HSA, fill up that bucket. And then beyond that, then a, you know, kind of a taxable brokerage account. And so we can, you know, we can keep stretching, just like we talked about on the under 40, we can keep stretching into our 40s to just keep doing a little bit more, because we still have a lot of time to compound. You know, if you're 50, and in today's world, the likelihood is that you're going to want to work till 65, maybe even 70. We're seeing that more and more. So from 45 to 65 is still 20 years of compounding and growth, which is a significant amount. So, you know, it's not too late to change your focus. And, you know, hopefully, like, you know, and you, as you get, you know, even closer to 50, you know, children are moving out, we hope. They tend to, some tend to boomerang, but, you know, hopefully our children are moving out and they're starting to get, you know, off of our payroll, so to speak. And we're able to, you know, reallocate those funds and use that to kind of catch up if we haven't done a good job in the pre-40 phase.
So it's never too late, and never too late to change strategies or to begin. But the
we can always get better.
Yeah, I can always get better. The ultimate goal is to be able to retire whenever that age is, you know, whether it's,
that's right,
you know, 70s, the new 60 or whatever, but to live comfortably after that. So another thing I wanted to talk about is, you know, we're in this age of AI, and, you know, people think about AI and Skynet and robots taking over the world and all that good stuff. But what are your thoughts as far as AI in investing and also in investing in companies that are related to artificial intelligence?
So AI, I think AI is here to stay. And it's going to continue to advance. You know, right now we've all kind of, you know, we hear about ChatGPT, starting to use ChatGPT, where you can, you know, go in and ask it to summarize information, or it'll summarize information from the web and give you results. And, you know, and where companies are starting to get really creative in how they're creating bots and using those things. And so we're really, I think, just kind of scratching the surface of what this technology is going to do. In the advisor space, I think AI is going to be a powerful tool. And I think to deny that would be naive. I get the question a lot, will AI replace advisors? And I think it depends on what kind of advising you're doing. If you're advising on the investment lineup, you know, AI can understand and build you a, you know, a 60-40 portfolio pretty easily and track it for you and tell you when to make trades. What AI is going to struggle with is trying to help you understand what kind of investor you are. Because one of the most important aspects of investing is the emotional aspect of it. And so we spend a lot of time getting to know our clients and how they react to economic challenges. Because when we know that, we can create a portfolio that fits that. And what I mean by that is, you know, if you have somebody that is very conservative and you get them in a portfolio that is too aggressive for them, and you have a 2008 level market downturn, they're going to sell. They're going to panic. They're going to sell, and they're going to go to cash at the worst possible time. And so, but understanding that, and by having a conversation and triggering some of those points, you can catch that in their body language. We can build a portfolio that is more balanced, that is more defensive in those situations, and just help them understand the why behind why we're doing it. We're also the person that answers the phone when the market does downturn and say, remember, we built this model, we've tested it, we've ran your retirement projections, we know it's all going to be okay. And that's where it's going to be hard for AI to be that human person telling somebody it's going to be okay. Or understanding the family, applying family dynamics. There's some things that, you know, it'll be very difficult for AI to do that because it doesn't have some of those real human features of, you know, of empathy and emotion and understanding. Now, on the investment side, I'm very interested in AI because I think it's going to change, fundamentally change so many businesses. I mean, you know, we're even hearing, you know, you hear about radiologists. You know, AI is going to do all of the initial scans and flag all the areas of concern for the radiologists to look at. That's going to take away, you know, some of that natural human mistake factor where, you know, you've looked at, you know, 25 scans already today and you're on your 26th and your eyes are glassed over a little bit. You know, AI is going to make a lot of professions better, you know, as they implement it. There are going to be some professions that it will probably put out of business. But the companies that are providing, you know, I don't know, I not only look at the companies that are doing the AI development, but also the ones that are providing the critical infrastructure from systems platforms, microchips, you know, those kind of things, storage, those things. I mean, the data that's going to have to be required, you know, because AI is referencing a data library and the storage capacity is huge. That's why you're seeing just data, massive data centers being built, you know, all across the US right now. I think those are going to be good investments as well.
It sounds like there's a lot of opportunities out there for investing in AI companies. I think the big takeaway is, though, that when it comes to investment advising, a robot's not going to care for you like Ron McIntyre is. And that's a true. Robot's not going to get to know your kids. So I feel pretty confident with a human advisor.
Yeah, but, I think most people will as well in the long run. Mm-hmm. But we'll probably implement AI as part of our tools, you know, to make sure that, you know, we're able to scan large amounts of market data very efficiently.
Right, right. So we talked about employees in investing and getting involved in retirement plans, but how do we get employee engagement more in retirement plans?
So, you know, in those spaces for folks that do have a plan, that's what your advisor should be bringing to the table. Have employee meetings, ask your advisor to come, you know, when you have either a town hall or, you know, maybe an all hands meeting or, you know, and let them have a few minutes on the agenda to talk about the plan, talk about the benefits of the plan. And sometimes it's just helping them understand what investing is. You know, sometimes employees have never heard this, so they don't understand, so they naturally stay away from it because they don't know how it works. So having opportunities to have an advisor there that's, you know, that's energetic, excited about the plan and helping people understand it, staying there after to take the one-on-one questions, because a lot of times employees have questions but they don't want to raise their hand in the group. But if you kind of hang out, you'd be surprised how many will come and ask you questions. And they just have a few questions and then they're ready to sign up for the plan. And once you get it's also kind of has a snowballing effect. You know, when employees start to participate and all of a sudden they start to see their money growing, you know, they're getting the matches, they're getting profit sharing, maybe they're having market returns and they're seeing that balance grow and they're, you know, they do share, employees do talk and that excitement can become contagious. So it's about It's about the communication. It's about the energy. I mean, these are really great things that employers do for employees, and employers are putting, money behind it. It's, resources that you're spending that could be spent elsewhere. So you want to make sure you're maximizing, you're getting your maximum benefit for the resources that you're spending. And that kind of falls, on your advisor, in my opinion, to help promote that.
So awareness and excitement. Those are two key things. So tell us the different types of investors and how to understand what type you are and how to understand risk tolerance.
Okay. When we spend time with employees or even investors on our private side, the easiest way to kind of understand what type of investor you are is to try to visualize situations. And so, everybody has these little workbooks that you can answer questions 1 through 10. And the problem is that people tend to overestimate themselves. And so when you do a visualization process, you can start to kind of really read the body language on people. That's why I kind of prefer that. So we always usually start off saying, if you have $100,000 in your investment account, your retirement account, whichever it is, and we talk back about 2008. So in 2008, the market went down 40%, roughly. So that would mean that over a period of time, a few weeks, you would have watched your portfolio shrink from 100,000 to 60,000. And to gauge someone's response on that will help you gauge what kind of investor they are. If they like just say, well, yeah, that's what happens, then they can be a high level equity investor. They can be in that 75, 80, 90% equities. If somebody is like, I mean, you see almost a visceral reaction, they're turning red, they're sweating, and it does happen. Or they shake their head, or they'd say, I cry. We know that equity. And then we say, okay, so how would you feel then if you opened up that statement, instead of 600, it said 800,000? And then you start to see that reaction. They might nod their head a little bit, and you're like, okay, now they feel a little bit more like a 50-50 investor. And if they're still shaking their head, then we kind of know we need to be an investor that's probably in that 20% equity and 80% fixed income. And I say 20% equity instead of saying all, fixed income, all bond type investments, is you have to have about 20% of equity, in my opinion, to just be able to keep pace with inflation. Otherwise, in the bond side, you're just not going to keep up in an inflationary market. You kind of need that little bit of boost. But, when you talk to them, you say, okay, now we've got the 100,000 and we only got 20% equities. So if it dropped, we're talking about, somewhere in the $8,000 range. We're at 92,000, and they're much more tolerant of that. So, and we could talk through that. And then what we do is we take that and we kind of use that to do the retirement projections and kind of show them the effect, because they do have to understand, when you're very conservative, that although your portfolio will be stable, your market return, would be expected to be less than somebody that had a much higher equity invest piece. But it's usually doing that, visualization exercise that really helps people kind of dial into who they are.
Yeah, and we see it, at least in the construction industry. If you're in the construction industry as an owner, you're not extremely risk adverse because it's a very risky industry.
Right.
So there's a lot of risk, but there's also a lot of reward. And that just goes with investing, high risk, high reward.
That's right. I mean, they're entrepreneurs by nature, so the owners usually have a whole different threshold for risk than, some of their employees.
Right. So there were two interesting things that you'd mentioned to me in our previous conversations. Can you explain for our listeners what each of the following are? The first one is the power of compounding, and the second being the power of target date funds.
Yes. The power of compounding, and I think it was Einstein said that this should be the ninth wonder of the world. So compounding is the simple concept that when you have money invested, that money that's invested makes earnings, and that earnings becomes part of your investment base for the next year, and that earns again. So you're compounding each year what you have invested plus what you've earned for that year becomes your new balance that's invested to hopefully grow again. So, you start off with $100, and that first year, let's say you make eight. Now you've got 108 invested. So the next year, you make $8.62. So now you've got $116.62, and it just continues to compound. There's a neat tool with compounding that we often talk about in our employee presentations is the rule of 72. So if you take your market return and you divide it into 72, it tells you how long it takes your money to double if you don't even add an additional penny. So if you have it, to make the math simple, if you had a 10% return, your money would double every 7.2 years. And so if you started with, $1,000 at a 10% return for 7.2 years, at the end of that mark, it'd be 2,000. Another 7.2 years, it'd be 4,000. Another 7.2 years, it would be 8,000. And so that compounding feature is incredibly powerful, especially now when you take that and you say, okay, that's our compounding of just our base, but I'm also adding to it new contributions, new match, potentially new profit sharing. So that compounding of that base just continuing to grow and add new investment returns to it becomes, really powerful. When you think about those numbers, let's say you've done a really good job saving and you're up to 300,000, right? And 300,000 becomes 600,000 in 7.2 years in that example. And that's when you kind of start to see critical mass in the investment world. On the side of target date funds, these are relatively, I should say they're not new, but you're seeing them a lot more in retirement plans. I'm a big fan of them because oftentimes when we're meeting with employees, they just don't know what to do. And in most retirement plans, the employees are ultimately responsible for what they pick in their investment package. We as advisors, kind of help them understand who they are, teach them about the investments, guide them on their choice, but they're ultimately the ones that fill out the form and pick it out. Target date funds, what they do is they help people say, okay, this is when I'm going to retire. And so I know this fund is generally appropriate for somebody with that retirement date. And what they do is they are a perfectly balanced portfolio for that, but they start off with a, if you're, let's say you have a target date that's 2055, you're going to have a high proportion of equities, probably 90%. But it'll, those equity portion, which is the volatile piece, and generally as in investing, as you get closer to retirement, you want more fixed income. So generally during that, so what these target date funds do is it gets, you get less and less equity as we get closer to that retirement date. Now, most of them are what they call through. So that means they're really targeted to hit a certain point at retirement, but they're designed for you to be able to stay invested in them long after that target date. It doesn't mean that you go all to fixed income. It just means that based on, proven market principles, your portfolio allocation gets more conservative as you get closer to retirement. And it does that with the contributions you put in. It does it with the match. So it is truly a vehicle that if you just want to say, I want to put it somewhere, I want to know that I'm kind of invested in the right space for somebody my age, and I don't want to have to worry about rebalancing, target dates are great options for those people. And if you're, and then you can still take your own preferences. So let's say somebody is set to retire at 2055, but they're really conservative. We could look at a target date fund that's a 2025, even though, they might be 40 years old and not going to retire in 2025, but their investment style is like somebody that's going to retire in 2025. So there's nothing wrong with having a target date that's different. You know, you might be 60 and a very aggressive investor, so, and still want to use a target date, and you might use a 2055, a 2060, something well beyond when you're expected to retire. All it does is that you don't have to worry about rebalancing each year to get more conservative as you get closer to retirement. That's the real power of a target date fund.
Sounds like there's lots of options there and lots of tools that you all use to plan it out right to the very end.
It is. And we want to give, you know, as an employer, you want to give employees, you know, choices and options, and the right vehicles to make their, you know, to make their savings work for them, you know, and to meet their needs.
Right. Ron, we're getting close to the end of the podcast. Are there any other comments about investment and retirement planning that you'd like to mention?
I think I'll just to say, to touch back that, you know, when I thankfully got started in investing early, I got interested in it. I started doing it, which is why I wanted to, you know, to kind of bring these concepts to the firm. But it's never too late and it's never too early to start, you know, and to help, even if you have children, help your children to start understand savings. You know, my daughter has been doing a Roth IRA since she was 16. She started working, you know, at the local retirement home, and I started making her put some of her money away into a Roth, and she's very thankful for it now, and she's developed those habits. So it's never too early. And then, you know, even if, you know, if they're closer to our age, Eddie, it's not too late, and it'll still make a difference in your retirement. Social Security, you know, only makes up about somewhere around 70% of the average person's budget in retirement. And so we have to have some things to fill that gap. And it's never too late to start to fill that gap. So don't say, you know, I can't worry about it now. It's never too late. And, you know, there's tools and options and people out there to help you do that.
Those are excellent points to wrap up the segment. So Ron, I want to thank you for being on the podcast. You're definitely an asset to our firm, and you're doing great things with the wealth division. And, you know, hopefully one day we'll get you back on here, maybe after the election is over and, you know, things have settled down and shook out. But there you all have it. This wraps another episode of Constructive Conversations. Ron, before we do go, if someone needs to get a hold of you, wants to get a hold of you to talk about retirement planning and investing, what's the best way they can do that?
So they can, we do have a link on our Brown Edwards website to wealth management. They can reach our contact information there. They can reach us at the Brown Edwards office here in Lynchburg at 434-948-9000. Or you can email me at rmcintyre@brownedwardswealth.com.
Good deal. So this wraps up this episode. Make sure to subscribe to our Brown Edwards YouTube channel and watch for future episodes online or wherever you get your podcast. This has been your host, Eddie Thompson. So long until next time.